Hour number two on this Friday morning, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Mike Doc Emmerich, who'll be on the call in the booth with, I believe, Anson Carter on Sunday morning. Yes, Sunday morning, 11 a.m., Predators and Blues, which I believe, Willie, I cannot remember. There's been a noon. There's been a one. There's been a two. I don't think I ever remember an 11.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking about that myself. I don't remember
an 11. I think noon is the earliest I ever remember, and I think that was because they were playing an Eastern Conference team, and it was one Eastern. It was noon our time. I definitely know that home there hasn't been anything
yes.
this early that I can remember.
I think that's right. Maybe in the past, maybe for a playoff game, 11, possibly.
Ooh, I don't.
An NBC playoff game, perhaps.
I don't remember, but.
Well, that'll be something.
We need to look into that.
If Nick Barnowski's listening, search that for the game notes for Sunday.
All right, speaking of Sunday morning, he'll be in the booth here in our fine city. We always love catching up with Mike Doc Emmerich. He's on the line with us. Of course, NBC, the national game Sunday morning will be here in Nashville. Predators hosting the Blues. Mike, how you doing? Good morning.
Darren and Willie, good to talk to you guys.
It's great to talk to you. It was awesome to catch up with you several times last year in the run to the Stanley Cup Final. And in fact, I remember, Doc, the first time I sat down with you was a Predators morning skate in the United Center surrounding game one of round one of the playoffs, and little did we know, right, what kind of ride was about to happen for the Predators, what kind of journey they were going to go through.
It was magnificent, wasn't it? And now they're totally off the radar because they're leading the division. They've got the best power play at home in the sport and the best penalty killing on the road in the sport, and everybody knows about the Predators now, but those were the days of innocence when it seemed like that the Blackhawks were the decisive favorite, and they didn't score a goal at home in two games.
You know this, being around the game for so long, and we all understand this, and it's not just hockey, it's in all sports. Market size, fan base, it matters when you're putting on a nationally televised game. You want the ratings, the best ratings, and traditionally the biggest fan bases get those games, and so therefore we've seen a lot of Blackhawks and Rangers and, you know, the usual suspects over the years on national television. But last year, how much do you think that run and what happened in a market like Nashville, where the city became, it just was taken over in a sea of gold and hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets who didn't have tickets, just watching the games on big screens and the ratings when you didn't think that a Nashville team could garner good ratings nationally? How do you think that changed things moving forward?
Well, it became infectious, didn't it? I mean, many people across the country know about Nashville being a home of country music and about all of the famous people that have taken residence in Nashville. And they've known about there being a hockey team there, but they didn't know how good the team was. And they may not need to be as reacquainted with how good the team is as you and I talk today, but the other side of it was a fantastic party that was thrown all through the spring. And it turned out to be based in Nashville right through to the game six against Pittsburgh. And maybe it didn't have the finish that all the fans in Nashville wanted and many across the country wanted, but it certainly set the table for another great run by the Predators this spring. I think for fans, you agonize with your team up and down during the course of the season, but during the course of the year, there comes a time in the pursuit of happiness when it's time to just sit and be happy. And I think for Nashville fans, probably for me to dictate the terms for Nashville fans, this is one of those times. Your team is great. It's settled in really well. It's playing wonderfully. And you have St. Louis coming in a game that becomes very important for both teams, but especially for St. Louis, coming in here on Sunday. So it's a great time in the lives of a Nashville fan to be turning out and watching the team play.
This may be a silly question, but here goes. Because the game has changed and evolved into what we see today, where it's all about speed, some speed, and then some more speed. It's a fast, fast game, as we know. The athletes a little bit different. You don't necessarily have to be the big body guys that we were grown accustomed to in the past. And it's not about neutral zone traps, and it's not about slowing things down and, you know, cluttering and bogging things up. Does that change things for you in the booth at all?
Well, yes. I mean, it has more of a flow than it did. And I think once Brendan Shanahan gathered his people together and they had the conference in the middle of that dark winter of 2004-05, and they determined that, I believe, out of 11 rule proposals that came out of that, 9 were adopted. And things changed radically right after that. And then, of course, the coaches, some of them came up with ways to combat that. And so we had to retool the rules yet again. But I think the thing that's come from that is that now size does matter some, but speed matters all the more. And where there were guys out of that 2004-05 lockout, they could play into their 40s. There are fewer of those because now there are guys into their 33s and 34s who have found that the game has gotten faster and that they can't keep up as well. And so there are guys whose careers are ending in their mid-30s, whereas it used to be that it was the later part because the guys coming in now can skate so much faster. And the game is faster, and it's a lot of fun to call because it's going back and forth. It's a thrill to be a part of this, and 45 years hasn't been my enthusiasm. And I'm sure that the Predators fans who have followed this sport for that long, even though they haven't had the Predators there that long, who feel the same way. It's just a thrill to go to the rink and watch the old players do what they do and to see the collisions that take place because it still is a body contact sport and to watch how well this team has been built by David Poyle.
Mike Emmerich is with us. He'll be on the call for NBC Sunday at 11 o'clock as the Predators take on the St. Louis Blues. And, Mike, I'll tell you, it's interesting as you describe the speed here. We had one last night that was pretty interesting where Kevin Fiala accidentally did the move that you saw in the All-Star game with Kucherov where he sort of lets the puck go and fakes like he's going to go make a shot, and the puck just sort of glides right through the five hole there. It's such an interesting play to see that players are actually practicing moves like this and executing moves like that, and Fiala sort of did it on accident, but at the same time, in that moment, you're thinking to yourself, did he try to do that?
Yeah, I'm so happy for him to have the year that he's having and to be healthy after what happened in the playoffs against St. Louis last year. And I think, too, the moves that guys used to practice in practice and never think of doing in a game, they can do now, of course, especially in a lopsided game like that one did turn out to be. It was fun to watch the power play and a couple of shots that hit the post, one from Yossi. And on the same power play, that one was from Yossi. I can't remember who the other one was that hit the post. It may have been Ellis. But to see Arvidsson play as well as he has and to be as hot as he has. But Fiala is a wonderful story, too. We're just looking forward to all that. And, of course, we encourage Predators fans to bring – I really love animals, and I'm glad that they have the Humane Society promotion going on Sunday. So bring treats, and make sure you leave treats at the door because that's part of it. One of my fun calendars from one of the past Predator years was Jason Arnott on the cover holding a huge bulldog. And he was about the only guy on the team that could hold that dog. But I remember asking about it. He said, I was able to hold it. It was heavy. It was probably 75 to 80 pounds of dog, but he was actually a fun dog, but that Jason made the cover that year. And I know that they do this calendar every year, and like many teams, they work with local humane societies. They have a fashion show going on today. It's all a part of how wonderful this team is in working with the community, too. I guess I got us off the rails there, guys. I'm sorry.
Mike, it's interesting. These next few days, there's so much talk around the league, and it's so much fun just to sort of listen in on all these ideas that are being thrown out there at the trade deadline. But it's very compelling to see what some of these teams will try to do to add a piece here or there to load up for the postseason.
Yeah, it was fun to see last night that I was affiliated with the network that carried the New Jersey Devils games for 21 years. And it was just a no-no. You never made a deal with the Rangers because they were fierce rivals 5 miles apart. They hated one another, et cetera. You never thought of dealing with them. And here comes Michael Graff head across the Hudson to add some more speed to the Devils after their game, after the Rangers game last night. So you never say never, I guess. But it'll be exciting between now and Monday to see what pieces are necessary. The Predators look really good to me, and I don't know that David Poile is considering anything. I'll tell you, Ilari Tolvanen, who played for Finland in the Olympics, only 18 years of old. He's a Predators draft choice, 18 years of age. I don't know at what point he might be added to the team. That's not up to me, but boy, he looked good. He got 9 points in 5 games for Finland in the Olympics. And that just shows how well put together this team is. Peter does a great job coaching them, and they're really deep, and they just look good. It's a time to enjoy them, and we plan on doing that Sunday, as well as the Blues, their competitors. They're going to try to wax the Blues 4 straight on Sunday.
Mike, you've done so many great Olympic events over the years, and I'm guessing in this day, in this time of the year, you're not getting a whole lot of sleep in general. I remember seeing you coming in for one of those games in Anaheim a couple years ago where you'd flown all night from wherever you were the night before to call the Predators game that evening. But did you stay up and catch up with the USA versus Canada game the other night?
Oh, yes, right to the finish. Wasn't it great?
It was awesome.
It was thrilling. I actually texted one of the players on the team that, okay, wonderful, make sure you sing the song loud when you sing it. I'm going to bed at 2:10 Eastern time. And then I sent a text later saying, no, I stayed through it. It was such an exciting celebration. I stayed awake till 3 o'clock or a little bit after Eastern time. It was thrilling, wasn't it? I mean, it was one of those games that both teams played wonderfully, Canada in the first period and the U.S. in the second, third, and overtime. Particularly in the third and overtime, they dominated. And it was almost one of those things. It was sort of scary if you were an American fan that, gee, they overplayed and they played them so much better. It's a shame to see this end in a shootout, especially were the dominated team to come back and actually take the gold medal in a shootout. Didn't work out that way, but it was thrilling. And that's one of the things that you give up. Sleep, as my former partner Bill Clement used to say, sleep's overrated, especially when you're entertaining yourself so much by watching a game like that.
Mike, we're really looking forward to Sunday morning. It's going to be a lot of fun here at Bridgestone Arena, and we look forward to seeing you. Thanks so much for doing this, as always.
Oh, it's great talking to you guys again, and who knows, we may be doing this a few times.
We would love to do that.
Thank you.
Certainly the plan.
You guys have a great day.
You do the same. Mike Doc Emrick, NBC, of course. It is the nationally televised game Sunday morning, 11 o'clock puck drop here in Smashville as the Predators host the St. Louis Blues. And you know what? 2 weeks ago, St. Louis looked like they were okay. Everything was just fine. And now things are getting a little bit hairy.
Well, for a few hours, Minnesota had moved up into the third spot in the Central. Now, Dallas won later last night, and so they hold the spot. So Nashville 83, Winnipeg 79, Dallas 74, Minnesota 73, St. Louis 72. And then there's two teams at 71 right below them. So the Blues are fighting to stay above the line right now. So you're going to see a desperate team on Sunday, without a question. Remember, they had the 3-0 lead over the Predators with 11 minutes to go, not too long ago. So that will be in the back of their mind when they come in here.
All right, in just a few minutes, we're going to come back with your second installment of the brackets. And I'm sure by now a lot of you are aware of the latest round. Julian, what jumped out at you? And by the way, Yahoo Sports continues and has always been, I've said, the watchdog for the NCAA, because it's when Yahoo Sports gets involved. Usually that's when the NCAA has to wake up and see what the heck's going on. Of course, it's way past all that. But when you saw the latest round and a lot more specifics, what did you think?
Yeah, I woke up this morning to a text from my mom saying that Duke, North Carolina, NC State were all implicated in the whole FBI investigation, the Yahoo reporting that came out. And I clicked on Pete Thamel's article to read to see exactly what the specifics were. And to me, a lot of it was a much ado about nothing. Because you look at the player dinners, and you're talking about dinners from guys like Wendell Carter, who's at Duke right now, got $70 dinner for his mom. Bryce Johnson played Carolina, only had a $100 dinner. So a lot of that, these dinners, according to NCAA rules, if they're owed under $200, not much can really be done about it. So that was much ado about nothing. But then you see Dennis Smith Jr. from NC State getting about 75 grand while he was in college. Isaiah Whitehead, Bam Adebayo, who was just at Kentucky last year, getting 36K. And like, okay, that's a problem. But still, I'm sitting here wondering, well, this documentation shows one agency giving players free meals and thousands of dollars. But this is not exactly line up to the idea of players being funneled to these agents and to these universities. So I'm still trying to figure out, where is that documentation, those wires of, you know, what happens with Adidas, with the Brian Bowen stuff, where he's also implicated in this, his dad receiving even more money. I'm more interested in who are the guys who are feeding these college players, just like the coaches who are feeding college players to like certain clothers and agents and advisors. Not really interested in who received a dinner, because I feel like there's a lot that we're missing that actually might be a big deal. Because the dinners, that's one thing. But guys getting $100 dinners, that's not a reason for the FBI to step in. Now, guys getting 75K and being funneled into advisors and agents, that makes sense. But the dinners, that doesn't matter to me at all.
Markel Fultz, $10,000. But yeah, when you talk about the dinners, Wade Baldwin, Vanderbilt, was listed in the documents by the feds. I think it was a dinner with Christian Dawkins, I believe.
Yeah, who is part of ASM, which is
at the forefront.
Yeah, the forefront of, at least from what we know. And this is just one agency. It's Andy Miller, who is a former NBA agent, was prominent until he kind of stepped down back in December because of this whole issue that stemmed back in September because of the FBI. So this is only one agency. So I'm sure there's plenty more agencies out here who are doing the exact same thing. But what I want to know is, who exactly is actually committing federal crimes and who is funneling these players from said program to said agency? Not really concerned about who just paid a parent $80 for a meal to Carrabba's in Longhorn Steakhouse. Like, come on. That's not a big deal at all. And I know Kevin Knox, Kentucky, he's one of the guys I was listed up there. And from everything I've read so far, they're not really worried about it because it couldn't have been that big of a deal. And same thing with Colin Sexton, who was held out at the beginning of the season, but he hasn't missed a game. He's up there. None of these guys that have been listed, even Malcolm Brogdon for Virginia, like none of that seems to be that big of an issue. I'm still trying to figure out where exactly is the federal crime in all of this, and, you know, guys getting paid money and then not signing with the agency.
I saw Kyle Tucker tweeted out that he spoke to Knox's dad, and he said he fears nothing.
Because it's as simple as what you would have to do, if anything, you might sit out a game, but all you have to do is pay back whatever you owed. Whatever that dinner was.
That's nothing. That's
nothing.
That is nothing.
So the whole talk of Pete Thamel and Yahoo having this bombshell, well, the only bombshell that really came out was Dennis Smith Jr. got 75 grand to go while he was at NC State. Not to go to NC State, which would be the issue. It'd be while he was there, which is, okay, cool. He took a lot of money. Not like it's the first time. If it's a shoe company like Adidas handing the money to go there, then the coaches to say, like, hey, you need to go to ASM after you graduate, that's where the crime is. But players getting money.
With us. Yeah,
that's not a huge issue.
With an agency.
Yeah, that's not, and that doesn't seem like a big issue to me. So I'm failing to understand where the point is and the whole bombshell that they've been telling us about.
Also, don't ever underestimate the ability for these coaches. I've already seen the narrative getting tossed out there by some attorneys. I mean, why is Kelvin Sampson coaching right now? Well, he had good defense, and, you know, he paid his penalty and he's back. But the narrative you're going to hear is that it is plausible. They're already floating this out there, that it is possible for all these third-party people that had the money changing hands could do so without the coach knowing that it was going on and without the player knowing that it was going on. That has been floated out there as a plausible, this could happen without the player or the coach knowing that 50 grand was changing hands or whatever the number is.
Is making a deal with the parents. Sure, or a middleman.
Yeah,
of course.
And that's already been,
and that's the layers of it, right?
That's already been proven true in Brian Bowen's case with the Louisville Adidas thing when he got 100K. His dad got the money. He didn't even know about that at all. He's like, I'm going to Louisville. I guess he was told, like, his parents' decision, hey, you're going to Louisville. And his dad got like $1,500 in flights and travel expenses from ASM as well. He didn't know anything about that. It's a lot of like the parents. Miles Bridges' mom got $400. He's currently playing at Michigan State. Does he know about that? I don't know. I know Reggie Bush definitely knew about his parents having a house bought for them. That's completely different than getting a $70 meal.
So what do you do if you're the NCAA? If that is the way that the defense is up there, say, hey, coaches didn't know, players didn't know. What do you do about these guys from the shoe companies and the financial planners and the agents that, if you believe that line of thinking, they were the ones orchestrating all of this?
Well, we know the NCAA doesn't have the manpower or the teeth to do anything. So there's
so everybody's guilty, so nobody's guilty?
Well, the thing is, they have to have the documentation handed over. And right now, a lot of this stuff is under protective order. So there's a possibility that they never get these concrete documents to be able to move forward and do anything.
But we were told in the story that they had all that, right? They had all the records.
Yahoo has it. The NCAA does not. So will they ever have it? And you can't put a sanction on a school because of a Yahoo report.
All right, we'll come back in Willie's second installment of his brackets. We'll hear that next on 102.5 The Game. All right, Julian, it's time to get the basketball music going. And it's time for Willie to tell us who's in and who's out.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of Bracketology. I have to tell you,
Willie is certified, just so you know, on this show.
Yep, once again, my spiel.
Just this show?
We have certified him on the show.
Once again, my spiel. I don't just listen to what everybody else is saying. I make my own decisions on who's in, who's out. And also keep this in mind. We are sitting here on February the 23rd? Today's the 23rd?
Yes.
It's early. Don't panic if your team is in or out. You're not there yet. Especially this year. Now, today, I will spare you all of the one-bid leagues, which I love naming off the schools, because there's going to be a couple of these schools. They're going to pull big upsets. And you're going to say, hey, yeah, Willie was talking about them. Loyola Chicago. Western was telling us about those guys. A couple of these teams we've been mentioning are going to make some noise. They will win a game or two. Once upon a time, Middle Tennessee was that team. All right. I don't have a whole lot of changes from last week because it seemed like a lot of the teams that needed to win, didn't win. And not a lot of teams that were below the bubble line surged. So here are just a couple of notes from last week to this week. Let's start in the SEC. Last week in the SEC, I had six locks. Auburn and Tennessee at the top. Nothing's changed there. Missouri, Alabama, Florida, and Texas A&M were my other locks. Now, all four of those teams, and I'll throw our Arkansas in as a fifth, which I didn't have in, and Kentucky's also in this mix. But Missouri, Alabama, Florida, and Texas A&M, what did they do from last week to this week to help their stock? Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
They hurt themselves. But because so many other teams are struggling as well, like Oklahoma, UCLA, Louisville, did they really lose any ground in the grand scheme of things? So I still think those teams are okay. So don't panic, even though Alabama is now sitting there at 17-11. And you're looking at that record and go, 17-11? They're in? But I think they're in. Now the team that helped themselves a little bit get stabilized, and let's use Texas A&M, also at 17-11. And they've got an ugly-looking record in the league, but they have the sixth toughest schedule in the country. They're coming into Nashville to take on Vanderbilt tomorrow. That's going to be an interesting game. If they lose that, could they get a scare? I don't know. I still, Julian, I'm looking for teams on the outside that are rising up. I don't see very many right now.
Yeah, I can't find any because I told you before the break that I thought Georgia might be one of those teams because they had gotten the back-to-back wins against Florida and Tennessee.
They had an opportunity.
And then they go on the road and lose to South Carolina. Yeah. Now they're back at RPI 70, and things don't seem great.
No, not relative to everybody else. And really, that's the thing to keep in mind is it's all relative. For example, Oklahoma can't beat anybody right now. Teams have figured out what to do with them. But they are still living off of a very tough schedule. a very deep league. And so their numbers still suggest that they're in. But they are losers of what now? 6 in a row? 7 out of 8? 8 out of 10?
They're falling apart.
They're falling apart, but they're still in right now. Now, could they slip out? Yeah, but only if other teams rise up from below. Now, a team that got a nice win last night was Utah. They're a team that has a very middling resume. Do I put them in yet? No. Texas moving up a little bit, but they had an opportunity with a win at Kansas State. I think would have shot them up into great shape on the bubble, but they lost. Kansas State held serve at home. So you have a lot of teams that are floating around there with true bubble resumes. I'll name them off for you. I've already named a couple. But these are teams, to me, that still have work to do, but probably haven't lost a whole lot of ground. Kentucky, big win. That helped them. I'm almost ready to put them in the lock category, as much as they've struggled. That's saying something. Oklahoma, still work to do. Providence had the weird game the other night against Seton Hall where the floor had condensation because of the ice underneath. They were losing to Seton Hall at the time, and Seton Hall finished off the win the next day. So Seton Hall is pretty much in at this point. Providence, still work to do. Michigan, a good week. They're probably moving up some. I mentioned Seton Hall moving up. Miami's in pretty good shape now. Virginia Tech with a very nice win, moving up the ranks. NC State, Florida State, UCLA.
What, bad loss last night.
Bad loss.
On the road at Utah.
Not good. And so that sort of puts them more in that Utah category. Now that they're fighting for their lives, UCLA. Kansas State, a good win, as we mentioned, over Texas in a straight-up bubble game. USC, still show me something. USC's best win of the year against Middle Tennessee.
And they lost their best player, too. Benny Boatwright out with a patella knee injury.
Shaky.
And then one of their guys, Chimezie Metu, took $2,000, apparently, according to Yahoo.
And didn't they have another guy that was ruled ineligible before the season even started?
D'Anthony Melton. He's been held out all season long. Turns out he wasn't even really a part of this, and he's withdrawn from school.
There's a lot of smoke around the Trojans. Then you've got Arkansas, got a nice win, but then turned around and got – what happened? I'm now all of a sudden blanking on what
happened.
They were
up 11-0 looking like they were going to shut out Kentucky in the first time in college basketball history, and then they lose by 15 points at home.
At home.
Really weird game.
I was ready to put them in if they had won that game. But
Kentucky
nope.
took over in the second half.
Nope. It's like some of these teams are looking to not get in. Washington got beat at Stanford last night. Another team that could have used a win.
Yeah, they're done.
They could use
Markel. I don't think they're done, though. They're not done.
It feels like these Pac-12 teams, how many Pac-12 teams do you have in Arizona, Arizona State? And Arizona had to win at overtime on the road at Oregon State last night.
I only have Arizona and Arizona State in for sure. Then everything else is very murky. We just mentioned UCLA and USC. Very murky. Washington, extremely murky. Somebody rise up. Maybe Utah can rise up. Still got work to do. Nebraska and Penn State, what have they done? Nothing to help themselves.
Also, Arizona State lost last night at Oregon.
Yes.
Where's Oregon at in this whole picture?
Still on the outside, but
Pac-12 is getting
one team. In the murk. I know.
Pac-12, one bid league.
Did that happen to them a few years ago?
I think they only had two teams a couple years ago. It was like Arizona and Washington, yeah. I believe, were the only teams that got in.
The Pac-12 is one of the toughest leagues to figure out. The Big Ten is the same way right now after the first three, Michigan State, Ohio State, Purdue. After that, Michigan, I guess, is looking pretty good, relative.
Got the road win at Michigan State.
How about Syracuse? How about Louisville? What's going on with them?
Syracuse has a big chance tomorrow. They had the chance against North Carolina, came back, tied that game late, couldn't close it out, have a chance tomorrow at Duke.
That's the thing about these teams in those leagues. The ACC, you get chances to get big wins. So you can look bad and look like you're out of it, and then all of a sudden beat two teams you're not supposed to beat, and all of a sudden you're in great shape. And that could happen in the ACC tournament as well.
But Louisville's been dominated their last two games.
They have not looked like an NCAA tournament team. Don't look like a tournament team. Syracuse fought back, looked pretty good against North Carolina, but missed a big chance. That could have been a huge win for them. Instead, on the bubble. TCU had a good week. I like their chances right now. And St. Bonaventure, remember last week when we did this, St. Bonaventure was poised to have their biggest chance.
And they won.
And they won against Rhode Island. And they haven't slipped up since then, which is good. They've got a couple other tough games, but that was a must win for them. I like their chances right now.
Yeah, the Bonnies barely survived at home against Duquesne.
But there's going to be a letdown, I think, when you have those games. That's the problem with a team like St. Bonaventure, and I would put Middle Tennessee in this category as well, that all of a sudden, if you have a letdown, just like any team can, the committee's like, up, you can't even beat Duquesne. What's going on? When that happens to other teams, but in other leagues you can make up for it because you have more chances to get big wins. So St. Bonaventure cannot slip up in those games. Now, here's my next question for you guys. Name me, Julian. I'm going to name you a couple of these mid-major teams. If they lose in the conference tournament, this is where the floating bubble starts happening.
Go ahead.
It can erase a spot for a team that is sitting there going, okay, Lenardi's got us in. Well, what if Nevada loses in their conference tournament? They're in, aren't they?
I would not think so right now.
They are 13 in the RPI.
Oh, 13 RPI? Okay.
13.
13 RPI. Yeah, you got to tell me the RPI. They're 13 RPI, then they're in.
Because as we know, the RPI is evolving. It's not the end-all, be-all anymore. You can't just say, well, if a team has an RPI of 25, they're in. But 13, I've never seen a 13 not get in. Now,
yeah.
I don't know what it will be.
What are your quad one wins?
Home against Rhode Island. Two wins against Boise State. A win against Illinois State.
They'd probably be all right. Because you're not going to leave an RPI 13 team out, especially when the quadrant system is based off of the RPI.
But if you read off these wins, I'm not seeing a win. Or go, okay, they're a tournament team, right? They beat Rhode Island at home. That's probably that's number eight. But other than that, two wins against Boise State. What do you think about Boise State's resume?
No, they don't
I don't think so either.
They're not there because they lost both the games to Nevada. That would have been the only thing on their resume that would have made them stand out. So they're going to have to win the conference tournament. And they also have losses in conference to Utah State and Wyoming. You can't have those. And they had a chance against SMU early in the year, lost that game. So best win they have is against Oregon, who's another bubble team.
I just want to know if Drexel is in or out after last night. Are they in or out?
No, they're one of the worst teams in the CAA.
Did you see that? So, Delaware hits a three-pointer with 2.5 minutes to go in the first half. It's 53-19. Delaware lost. Largest comeback in Division I basketball history. Down 34, Drexel came back and won.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how about this one? The buzzer beater by George Mason.
Twice.
They have beaten St. Joe's twice at the buzzer.
Yep.
And did you hear the radio call of the St. Joe's announcer that made the classic mistake of anticipating the overtime, and then the guy picks up the ball and heaves it and hits it. He goes, and we are going to...
Oh, no!
That guy didn't sleep that night, I
Poor
can guarantee
guy.
You. Oh, my. All right. Loyola Chicago.
No.
No?
In.
Loyola Chicago is right now 32
in
the RPI. 23-5 with a win at Florida.
That's in Florida is what is right now RPI, what, 64?
64.
Not good. Only one time in the Missouri Valley's history has a team won the regular season and not gotten an at-large bid. That was Missouri State a couple years ago when Konza Martin was the head coach. They had an RPI around 33, didn't get in.
West Durham said they're in.
Is that what Wes? Is that
put them in?
Is that what Woody's boy said?
He said it.
Put them in.
But he was also, I don't think he was saying if they lose the conference.
No,
tournament.
He said watch out for. He kept saying put this team on your radar. Watch them. They're really good.
The Ramblers. All right. See, this is what happens. You get these resumes of these mid-major teams, and you're thinking, okay, RPI looks good, 23-5, and then I don't know. How about Buffalo?
Buffalo.
Not the Buffalo Bills.
The Buffalo Bulls. Buffalo Bulls. Where are they at in the RPI?
I'm 37.
37. They're 38 as of today.
No wins against the top 50.
No.
Best win, Toledo.
Out.
Sorry.
At Ball State. Canisius. Nope. Not going to happen.
Kareem Hunt was not playing for Toledo. See, nope, they're out.
the MAC, the Mountain West, the Missouri Valley used to have resumes and multiple bids. It's just that those leagues aren't doing it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It's been a while. Well, Missouri Valley lost a ton of their teams, and all their coaches went to other schools.
Well, they're not cheating like, you know, like the Power Five schools are.
So. Yeah, I guess that's what's happening. They're not getting enough bag dropped at their school.
I didn't see their names on the list.
I did see Wichita State.
Yeah.
So it's Wichita State is now in the
American. But they were in the Missouri Valley up until this year.
It's one of the reasons they got out,
I think.
That's why they got out. Bag drops there, Greg Marshall. Rhode Island is the only mid-major team I can see getting in.
A-10 is a mid-major in your mind?
No.
I guess they sort of are, though.
They're kind of like a top-seven conference.
They've had some defections. They used to be a team that could get five in or six.
This has been a down year for them.
All right, how about Louisiana, the Ragin' Cajuns, 24-4, 14-1.
RPI.
Sounds like a good. RPI is 38.
No.
No wins against the top 100.
No. Well, definitely no.
Best wins against number 147, Nicholls State, 149, Texas Arlington, twice. It's not happening.
NIT, baby.
So there's not a lot. I guess the moral of the story is there's not a lot of these teams that have a strong resume that are no doubter that will shrink the bubble.
But good news for them, they'll get to host the NIT game.
So all of that to be said, this is a great year to be on the bubble. As we sit here right now, you can't complain right now that you didn't have a chance to get in. Get it done. You don't have to be great.
Is this a pep talk?
This is a pep talk to all of you on the bubble that are sweating it out. Like, right now, Florida, Texas A&M, sagging big time. What's going on?
Yeah, right now, Texas
A&M. Oklahoma. But those guys are in.
A&M has landed their plane here in Nashville. They've turned on 1-2-5 the game, and they're listening to Willie give them a pep talk. Don't go to Vanderbilt and lose tomorrow.
I don't want that.
You just win. You just got to win. Get it together.
No, I think I'll go the other way with Texas A&M. You guys are fine. You guys are fine. Just no problem. Just keep coasting. Maybe Vanderbilt will get them. But, hey, no complaints if you don't get in this year. It is a wide, wide bubble. And it's going to make for a very wacky NCAA tournament.
And what is Porter Jr. if he comes back? He's cleared.
Oh.
What does that do for Missouri?
Watch out, Kentucky.
Wait a minute. Have you guys heard he's cleared?
Michael Porter Jr. met with his doctors yesterday in Dallas, and he's good to go.
He's going to start practicing.
We don't know whether he'll play, but he might.
Just so you know, that's the whispers right now about Porter Jr.
The whispers is he's going to have 20 points and 30 rebounds tomorrow against Kentucky at Rupp in his debut.
He's not playing.
If he does that, that'd be incredible. If a guy came off the shelf for 3 months and then dropped 20 and 30 at Rupp in his debut.
Wow.
Are we good?
We're good. And remember, NCAA rounds 1 and 2 are in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. I'm telling you, you're going to want to be at these games. I'm jealous because I think we're on the road. I think the Predators are on the road.
Probably.
Probably if Bridgestone Arena's
I was just hoping for, like, give me one day.
Probably.
Is there one day that I'll be back in the transition? I don't think the math works. I'm bummed. But you can go to NCAA rounds 1 and 2. You're going to want to go. Bridgestone Arena. Fantastic excitement. Jump on in there. Later today, we'll look at some of the games this weekend that are the big bubble games. Opportunities for some of these teams to make a move on the bubble.
Tim Hasselbeck coming up at noon. Back to wrap up the second hour next. You missed it last night, since we got Willie's brackets, and we're kind of in the college basketball field. Really no big ones when it comes to top 25. Gonzaga beat San Diego. Purdue beat Illinois. Cincinnati beat UConn. UConn, Kevin Ollie is got to be dead man walking, right?
It doesn't look good.
It looks like that thing is over. Arizona beat Oregon State. St. Mary's beat Pepperdine. Houston lost to Memphis.
Yeah, that's a good win for Memphis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Memphis.
But they're not good.
They still play basketball?
Yeah. Tubby Smith.
It's sad when they're not in the discussion because they love that team in Memphis. They do. It's so tough. It's got to be tough for them when they're just not relevant.
Well, at least they have the Grizzlies. Oh, wait. Never mind. Yeah. They're bad, too.
Actually, some of the crazier games came OVC. So Austin Peay, Matt Figger, good job. The Govs beat SIU Edwardsville.
Hey, that guy's doing a good job.
Matt Figger's done a really good
job. Done a nice job at Austin Peay.
And here's the two shockers. Tennessee State went to Tennessee Tech and lost.
That's not a shocker, though. Tennessee Tech's pretty good, especially
But Tennessee State's now dropped what?
Yeah, two in a row.
Two straight after winning seven straight.
So they've dropped two in a row.
I'm worried that we hyped them up too much. We got them all pumped up last Friday. We're sitting there going, here they go. They're making their move. And then they got upset.
Well, we had Dana Ford on, and yeah.
They lost the game they should not have lost on Saturday. I think it was at home to Eastern Kentucky. Is that
yeah,
right?
Who's among the worst teams in the OVC. It was senior night, too, which is like, come on.
Yeah, how do you drop that one?
Lost to Jacksonville State.
And this is the thing about Jacksonville State. That's the team that beat them in the semifinals last year. For some reason, and I think it's when you watch, I don't know if the Jacksonville State, I haven't seen them play as much this year. If they have some guys, the issue last year was they had some guys in the paint that were tough to handle. And Belmont, that's not their strength. They're more perimeter-oriented. So Jacksonville State's now got a couple of big wins over Belmont. If they meet again in the tournament, that's a tough one. Tough matchup. And then Murray State now 15-2 in the OVC. They now have the inside track.
They'll be the number one seed.
At the regular season title.
Yep. Let's go down the barrel. Nate, what's up?
Hey, guys. So with the allegations that have come out about all these different schools, I want to know, how is the committee going to look at the potential bubble teams? I can't really tell right now if MTSU is on the bubble or not, but if they were on the bubble and Bruce Pearl ended up being fired before the tournament starts, which I think is a very long shot, how would the committee look at that as to whether MTSU gets in or not because MTSU lost to Auburn?
I think it's very unrealistic to think that all of this is going to come down to affect this season. I think maybe next season, but I'd
be
stunned.
Like,
well, he's asking whether the committee will look favorably upon the schools that haven't been mentioned if they're on the bubble.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know if they're going to go
that far. I don't
think
so. I just don't think they can do that.
Okay. All right.
Now, as far as middle is concerned, they keep winning. They're doing their thing.
Nine in a row.
And we mentioned this last week. They have a great non-conference strength of schedule. Six. They played people. The problem is they didn't beat. Auburn is one of them. They didn't beat Auburn. They didn't beat Miami. Didn't beat Southern Cal. Opportunities to get those top 50 wins. They've got some solid wins, but their resume is not going to blow you away when you look at what are their best wins.
Final three games of the season are all at home. Tomorrow night, they'll host UAB. Then they're off the entire week. They play again on Saturday against Western, their big rival.
They play Thursday, Western.
No.
Yeah, it's no. Saturday's UAB, Thursday's Western, next Saturday's Marshall.
That's right. Thursday. I was looking at the dates wrong. So UAB Saturday tomorrow night, 6 o'clock tip. Then Western Kentucky Thursday night at 7, and that game I think is going to be on CBS Sports Network. I believe. And then Saturday night against the following Saturday, March 3rd, against Marshall.
It would help Middle Tennessee a lot if Vanderbilt can knock a few more teams off. And they sneak into the top 100. I think it just looks better.
Well, they need them to get to 75 to get a quad one win, and that's just not going to happen.
That likely is not going to happen. Same thing with Ole Miss. Ole Miss is another team that they just beat. They embarrassed, smoked Ole Miss. Ole Miss has made a little bit of a surge. But, again, this is a classic eye test. If they were to lose, and is it possible they could lose? Could Western beat them in the conference tournament? Absolutely. Those are two very good teams.
I think what's important for them right now, because they're sitting at RPI 23, I believe, looking at it right now. Yeah, RPI 23 as of today. They, in these final three games, because they're all good teams that they're playing here. These are like the upper echelon teams of the Conference USA. They need to go at least to and one against these teams. Because I see that they could potentially drop one of those. You hope not because they're at home. But if they are going to drop one, they need to win the other two and then get to the semifinals of the conference tournament if they're still going to get an at-large bid. Because having the non-conference strength of schedule that they have and being top 25 in the RPI, it's going to be pretty hard to leave this team out just because of those metrics.
I agree.
Here's the question. Is anybody going to sit any of these guys down that may be scared that's being named? Is there any chance a school says, hey,
we gotta sit
you
got to
make him ineligible. We can't go into the tournament with this guy playing. You think that happens?
Well, Kentucky seemed – well, they've already talked to Knox and his dad, so they seem like they're not going to do that. I haven't read anything yet from people I know in the Triangle talking about Wendell Carter.
I mean, if Colin Sexton is ineligible, Alabama's toast.
Well, Alabama already – see, they already dealt with him early in the season, so they already kind of cleared up whatever was going on with him because they were holding him out at first in, like, the scrimmages, and then I guess everything was at all clear. And if they already knew this, which I would assume if they would have held him out, they would already had some idea that he had met with these people – to where it's like, okay, well, what happened? And he told them, they must have felt fine about it. Otherwise, I don't understand why they would have played him all year long if they were concerned about potentially him not being around this time of the year. But then again, who knows?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we don't really know. I mean, Miles Bridges, that changes everything for Michigan. I mean,
I can promise you Michigan State is not going to hold out Miles Bridges because whether he's eligible to play or not in the end of the day, by sitting him out, that's not going to help you win a national championship. If he wins and you win a national championship and he's ineligible, okay, fine. But you still won it.
Right, and then you get to go through what Louisville goes through or just went through in 2 years and they take it down.
I feel like it still feels better in the moment to have won a national championship instead of losing in the Sweet 16 because your best player had to be held out
out of precaution. It's gonna happen. I'm just simply floating out there. Is there a chance that anybody says a school administrator tells the coach, hey, you can't play him. We can't take the chance. He's got to be ineligible. I don't know. Probably not, but, man.
My guess is no, absolutely.
If it happens, some of these teams, it will change everything for them if that were to take place. All right, we'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. We had to move him around this week because of his TV schedule. He just landed in Nashville. He's going to join us to kick off the third hour next on 102.5 The Game.